You're listening to the Forest School Podcast. Delicious waffle chat about education, nature connection, child development, community building, and lots more. Hosted by Lewis Ames and Wem Sutherland. Hey, listeners. This is Lewis coming to you from the editing part. I'm just sitting down and listening back through this episode, and I felt like I really needed to put a little notice up at the front of this episode. So first thing to say is, obviously, we've got some different microphones going on, and this one, hopefully it's all legible and audible, but there is some shaky bits of recording that have gone on as there's four of us involved. The other thing to say is that because there are four people involved, you've got myself and Wem and Sarah and John, there is a few moments in this podcast where there is quite a lot of crosstalk going on. Now, I could blame it solely on lag. I could blame it solely on, you know, a bit of latency in the recording software. But to be totally honest, I think that was a partial reason. The main reason being, anybody that knows Sarah, that knows John, that knows me and Wem, knows that having the four of us try and chat is going to result in, you know, us trying to talk over each other from time to time. So if the crosstalk is tricky, hopefully there's not too much of it. There's only two or three moments, and less as the episode goes on. But I wanted to give you guys all a heads up about that one. But that is enough from me. I hope you enjoy this episode. Four, three, two, one. It gives me.
I tried putting this on my. Are we on?
But I can cut stuff out.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Is it this? My parents do this.
Oh.
Do you know that one? Apparently, they said it was a TV show.
Did they used to work in TV?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
One.
Gives me like performance anxiety. It gets down towards one, and I go, I'm supposed to do something. I should. Jazz hands, if in doubt.
Right, frog, we'll get Sarah to sing the little green frog song.
Green frog.
To warm us up.
The little green frog went in the rock went.
Hi, listeners. It's all
there
kicking
you go,
off.
See. Now we've officially started.
Well, okay, so.
You can
be
no problem.
Listeners, we're here with Sarah Knight and John Cree, and who very kindly agreed to chat to us. I'm going to read out the message that I sent because it's eggshelly for me, and I'm just going to read the thing that I wrote, which said, "Hi, here's my best effort at earnestly asking an awkward question without appearing rude. Please wish me luck. There was a post a while ago on Facebook that said, where do retired forest school leaders go? I know neither of you have retired, but we were wondering if you would be up for a chat on the podcast about where do people end up taking forest school. As two people who've been in the game for a while and have gone into research and training and FSA ambassadorship and all those jazzy things, we thought you would be the perfect people to ask." So clearly I navigated all of the eggshells because you're both here. Which...
yeah.
So,
I did almost skip out because of something about technology. I don't know.
Well, we're here. We can do that bit. Yeah.
We are.
We maneuvered that bit.
Yeah.
I still
find...
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
For...
I would like to talk about retirement, though, because it's a weird term.
Yeah.
Retired. Does that mean you have to get tired again? Or what is it? It's just, I don't understand retirement. People keep saying, John, aren't you retired yet? What? Does that mean you lose purpose in life?
For me, it's just that I can lose the bits I don't want to do.
Weird.
For me, it's about...
And you can take your pension.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to have to negotiate around a whole load of tetchy academics. So why am I helping organise a symposium? I don't know. But, yeah. Herding cats, isn't it? As a manager in a university, it was something I was fed up with, so I didn't want to do that anymore. So I retired from that.
Mm.
Yes. Yes, the last paid so that was the bit thing of employment doing, was
sort of last
sitting
most recently.
What they call a course group manager in university, which means you, as I say, herd cats. Try and get them all on the right campus in front of the right bunch of students at the right time, and then also do your own lectures, you know.
And were you lecturing
education
about
at the end,
school,
just
about
very,
early
very generally
or
education,
what were you lecturing about?
Which I was able to manoeuvre towards doing mostly forest school. I just let everybody else do the other stuff and kept the forest school bit for me.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And Anglia Ruskin University. Nice. We have two
and
campuses,
which university
one,
is that?
One in Chelmsford and one in Cambridge. And the difference is hilarious. My Essex girls. Oh, look, Sarah, I've got a pair of wheelies just for your lecture. It's good. My Cambridge one. Oh, shall I bring my green wheelies or my blue wheelies?
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm sticking
now?
A disclaimer on the start of this episode. Sarah does not represent the views of this podcast.
It was a long time ago. It's all changed since then.
Right, we've all become much more aware of
John,
as you said,
you
things. Oh, sorry, Dave.
Well. I was going to say, Johnny. Most recently, I saw you were doing your behaviour that challenges stuff.
Yeah, I've got another course on next week in London. Just come back from Guernsey and was there for a bit of a short break, but I was asked to do. This was for a real mixture of home educators. There were some teachers that I know have been doing a lot of training as a Guernsey Belly React. The tiniest local authority in the world on forest school net connection, that sort of thing. But a lot on anxiety and trauma now, and why we should be outdoors working with our more than human allies on all of this. So we had a lovely evening just around the campfire with parents, home educators, some teachers, looking at anxiety, stress, co-regulation with and in the natural world. So I have to pinch myself, and this is where I've ended up doing a lot of that stuff, having worked with particularly adolescents who are challenged by the system. Yeah, and the place I'm working, sort of working in, a little community wood in the middle of Worcester as a little mentor. Bit of supervisory stuff and going and leading your session when I'm needed. With some, yeah, real mixture. Home ed, kids referred to as flexi schooling, and adult mental health recovery. So I've sort of shifted into that health sector stuff as well.
A green prescribing type thing.
Yeah, but training health workers in just taking their practice outside more. So some people are sort of doing the green prescribing delivery, but it's more for actual health workers, nurses, therapists, psychologists, GPs, people working in secure units, people working with CAMHS. So that's with Marina, because we both worked with CAMHS for many, many years ourselves. Just moving into that training area, really. Yeah.
And is that something that surprised you? You sound like you're a bit surprised that your work has kind of gone in that direction.
I was an ecologist, and I worked for the Nature Conservancy Council and Wildlife Trust, managing nature reserves, and then fell into teaching, working with schools, and sort of, I was a youth worker. So we did all of that stuff with kids within the education system, but now working within the health service and doing a lot of stuff around trauma, which I would never, even 5-6 years ago, if you'd have said to me, oh, you'll be actually training others about sort of facilitating sessions on trauma, And I thought, what? And then it all just made sense, thinking, well, actually, most of the youngsters I've been working with have, a lot of them have had ACEs, had those childhood experiences. Ever since I started working in that youth work sector, I guess. It just has a label.
This episode of the Forest Call podcast is brought to you again by the fantastic Forest Tawi stove. It's available from the guys over at carbonfarmers.world. This is honestly the ultimate tool for like setting up fires with an outdoor education group of any kind. So it's got three different cooking surfaces, it's smoke-free, and also allows you to get like the most out of your fire so that you can be as efficient as possible. The Forest Tawi stove, you can demonstrate the whole carbon cycle because you turn the organic material of the sticks into charcoal. You can make charcoal crayons. You can put the charcoal into like your compost bin and stuff and get rid of all the odors. Plus, it makes biochar as you're working. So I was reading this on their website. If you make a kilo of biochar, you have saved 3 kilos of carbon from going into the atmosphere. So the Forest Tawi is a carbon neutral stove, which is amazing. If one of your focuses with your outdoor groups is teaching about climate change or about sustainability, then you can literally demonstrate capturing carbon and keeping it from going into the atmosphere with this stove every time you have a fire. The Forest Tawi stove is honestly a must-have for anybody that's working with groups outdoors. So like I say, if you go to carbonfarmers.world, you can pick up one of these stoves and honestly, it will change your outdoor sessions for the best. Thank you so much to the guys at Forest Tawi for sponsoring this episode.
Don't you think that really emphasizes...
No, go on, Sarah. Sarah's got the pause. Go for it, Sarah. Go, go, go.
Go for it.
What were you going to say, Sarah?
Don't you think that this is really emphasizes the fact that Forest School is such an interdisciplinary initiative? You know, we've got health people, we've got sports people, we've got ecology people, we've got wildlife trusty people, we've got all sorts. All involved. It's no longer just about education. And really interestingly, I've just been invited, I'm really happy about this, by a load of PhD students at Cambridge University who are working together. And it's the education department, the college, and the architecture department. And they're looking about at education as an interdisciplinary thing. And they want me to come and talk to them about outdoors and Forest School and stuff. I think that's really positive because, A, you've got Cambridge University there really interested. And, B, they're young. And, C, they're thinking about it in an interdisciplinary way. I think that's really healthy. I think that's a really good way forward.
I was going to say, it's to think of education as like that idea of like how much the space can affect the education, not necessarily. I know when I was teaching, the vibe that was sort of handed down to me was like the space is there as another tool. You know, like you should have this display up and you should have these like common words on the wall and like, there should be, I mean, as I look at it now, there should be no respite from the learning. It should be hammered in wherever your eyes happen to fail. So, you know, so that if they happen to look away from the board for a minute, you're still getting them to look at something, and then using the biggest air quotes here, of value, rather than thinking about, like, how does all of this holistically affect your mood and mental space while you are in a place to learn?
Totally, and it is that wholesome thing. Wherever we are, if this is going to be a wholesome education that's meaningful, that's applicable to life. I got really excited last week because we had she's an art therapist, but she's also a psychologist or something working in Somerset. And it was so refreshing to hear about the rewilding happening in Somerset, that big project that seems to be involving absolutely every sector of society. And just hearing this from a therapist that's working down there within the rewilding project as a whole in Somerset Landsat, but it's the biggest rewilding project at the moment in the UK, I think. really exciting. Mm. Yeah.
It's one of the things I had down in my notes that I wanted to ask you guys was like, so Forest School, I think it was last year, wasn't it? Celebrated 30 years in the UK. That was our kind of conference theme. And so I was thinking, oh, you guys have been involved for majority of that, if not all of that. But you, I would imagine, are in a small group right now of people that have been involved directly in Forest School for that long. And I was thinking, oh, it'd be interesting. So like, if I take myself, so I taught for 2 years and then moved into Forest School, there's a very good chance that I might end up doing, you know, if I'm lucky, another 30, 40 years of Forest School, which means I will be someone who has spent the majority of their life doing Forest School. That's what I will be, not someone who was, you know, a teacher who then did it for a few years or did it on the sidelines. That will have been what I did for my life. And thinking there's more and more, there'll be more and more people coming through, moving into this, the kind of stage that you guys are in of like consultancy and like advising people on different things and helping to orchestrate. And I was wondering if either of you had thoughts on what that will look like as we go through the next few years. There will be more and more people who have more and more time to go, now there's more of us doing consultancy. You know, in 10 years' time, there will be more people who have spent a significant amount of time in Forest School who can sort of legitimately advise and consult on things. And that, as I see it, will only grow.
No, I think that's really, I've not thought about that. It's a really exciting prospect.
It is very exciting.
You've got all these, and there are thousands of high school leaders, aren't there? It's just, yeah.
You look at people who've moved away from their roots and gone into consultancy. My concern would be, and I think this probably won't happen, that people will lose touch with their roots, because I think those of us who go out to the woods continue to go out to the woods. I mean, I go out every Tuesday with a group, and I go out once a month with Mel Harrison's Wood Sisters, and that's barking mad and it's great fun. And hopefully people who do decide to go into supporting others in whatever way they do it will, like John and I, continue with their own engagement in the wilder world, because it's far too easy to get tied up in the theory and everything and to lose touch with what it actually feels like.
Yeah, I think people see through that authenticity.
I hope so.
I'm a big believer in that. And the fact that you pull on immediately, like in the workshop yesterday, I was just pulling on stuff that's happened most recently, and people value that, and they see, they're just like children, they know when you're not being authentic, and when you're not basing this on your own practice that you're keeping up to date.
Can I ask, are there, so both of you are still, as you say, going out to the woods with groups. Sometimes I kind of try and project into the future and go, how will I feel about Forest School and this job in 20 years' time, for example? So in 20 years' time, I'll be 63. And I wonder, obviously, every single person is different. How... I'm thinking about like what elements of the job might I still be like, yeah, that is getting me out of bed in the morning. I blooming love that. It's so juicy. And what elements of the job in 20 years might I go, do you know what? If I could just not do that part, that would be great. Do you know what I mean? Like, and whether, and like for you guys, what are the bits that for you are still juicy and keep you going back to the woods? And what are the bits that you've been able to kind of like either hand over to somebody else or just do a bit less of, or just make that choice and go, do you know what? That was fine at one point and I sort of got on with it, but now not so much.
No.
Without naming any names, obviously. that person, I really didn't like working with them, so I zapped them off. And
something about energy, physical energy, I'm talking about now. So I've stopped working with adolescents because my last few years working with Worcestershire County Council, I had two youngsters 2 days a week. And also other days of the week we were delivering to big special school, but these two youngsters who'd been referred because of their high needs, for 2 whole years, I could not do that now. It was just, and there's two of us with them, but it was really, it was one of the hardest programs, and that was towards the end of working for a local authority. So I couldn't do that, and often we were working with groups of youngsters, adolescents, maximum size is 6, but the energy it took, my physical energy was just too much, so I've stopped that. I don't mind dropping in every now and then. I get asked at the Wood, which I do occasionally get asked, just work with us, with this particular youngster, and maybe build a bit of a relationship with them. But to do that day in, day out, week in, week out, I could just...
Yeah, we're pretty hardcore. Yeah, thanks, John.
So you are hardcore. You are hardcore. And even with little ones, which are lovely. I'm now a grandfather, and by 2 o'clock, this is just with two. There's another one coming along. I have to have a nap. I cannot do just take over. You need your nap, don't you? Said, yeah. And it's probably because I'm a bit more physical with him. And now Romy's starting to, it won't be long before she's walking. And I just think, I've been asked to go into their little nursery, which is a little, it's a bit, I'm just going to do some insert sessions with them. And I'm saying, that's what I quite like doing, just going in and dropping in every now and then. And passing possibly a few pearls of wisdom, but I don't know. So there does come a time where physically I just think the energy, even though I do try and do yoga every day, I don't weight lift so much, but all of that. So there's that side of things.
I like the drop-in thing. It's good fun. It's nice that. I cannot pretend that I keep my practice up to the standard that it used to be by any means. My group on a Tuesday, we're all... 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever. You know, it's an adult group. Mm-hmm. And we're there for mental health reasons.
God, I want to see the game of tag in that group. Amazing. Oh, so...
I've got a Monday group, that's not Tuesday, but it's a group of volunteers, and some of them come through the Adult Health Mental Recovery College, and they become long-term volunteers. And I... absolutely adore the play.
Yeah.
Just we were all in hammocks the other day, just swinging about playing. And it's the play and the sat round the fire cooking. That is the highlight of the week for me, because everybody brings something along, and it's bliss. It's true wholesome community. So there's that side of things to look forward to. It's just sitting around the fire.
Sorry, Sarah, I talked over you.
We drink a lot of coffee on a Tuesday. Yes, it's disgraceful. Yeah. Wood Sisters, we do the sharing food thing. It's great. You turn up with a pot that's got chopped vegetables in it, and you just throw it into the pot on the fire at 10 o'clock. Mm. And by 1 o'clock, you've got lunch. And it tastes different every time, and it's good fun, and people sling into it what they think we might like.
Nice.
And sometimes we do. Sometimes we wish they hadn't. And it's pretty good.
Amazing. Do you think, so that's really, I'm imagining that people might be listening to this, like forest school practitioners who are thinking, because it is still quite a new field, forest school, and we haven't got that many people, as Lewis said, who have been in the game for as long as you guys. And so in terms of kind of role models and kind of career paths and let's face it, like it's not a money-making enterprise doing any kind of forest school, but when you're trying to think about longevity of your career, and a lot of us are self-employed or freelance or on kind of shaky contracts with schools that are renewed every term or whatever, and so kind of thinking about the future is quite challenging sometimes, and you have to sometimes just go, no, just don't think about it. What is a pension anyway? Don't worry about it, and just carry on with, you know, and it's very full on. So you're just kind of hanging on by the skin of your teeth and working day to day, week to week. But that's really interesting, you saying that, you know, you get to still fill your cup with time in the forest and also make sure that you're kind of fueled for your consultancy or your academic work or your kind of mentorship work through still being connected to the woods. But you've moved in a direction of older people, and so you've got it, that kind of maybe meets your own energy where you are a bit, which is great. And I wonder what you guys think about the future of that. So obviously Forest School grew through early childhood provision, and then is, you know, gradually filtering into lots more spaces in education, and then is, as we've been talking about, going into like green prescribing. And do you guys think that in the years to come, the kind of adult Forest School market will increase? Do you think more adults who aren't perhaps, you know, sent our way through green prescribing or for mental health reasons, just generally a general adult population might be more open to doing regular Forest School? Do you think?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's direction. I'm getting older, but I just see that opportunity. I just see the community of older people getting their, if you like, their community hit, which is not just the human community, it is the more than human community. It's so beneficial, and we are an aging population.
Yeah.
So I can't help but think that this is going to grow. Because we are an aging population, we're growing longer. I mean, we're living longer.
And ways more healthily.
Possibly can't do as much as we can, but we can walk down to the local wood. If we can walk down to the local wood and sit around the fire with people of similar ages, and some who've possibly not been in the woods a lot, I'm thinking of a few people in our group who've just found their mojo again. And it's not just because they're with other humans. And we know the social prescribing is so important for older people and that whole meeting up, because loneliness is the biggest killer.
Yeah, I was saying to Wayne earlier. Yes,
something special about being around a fire.
Definitely.
That you can't,
no. I mean, I was saying to Wayne earlier, Thursdays I deliver Meals on Wheels. And I walked into one guy's house today and he said, oh, another human being. You know, and it's that's the experience for too many of them. And we're lucky, those of us who go down the wood on a Tuesday, that we can still walk and get to the wood. And one guy's got hernia and another one's got arthritis. So the hernia potters around and does various things, and the arthritis makes kindling. And, you know, but we can all find things we can do. And, you know, we can all...
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's got to be that thing, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's like the opposite. Not the opposite. It's like the other end of the scale in terms of, like, you know, if we think about Forest School coming from that early years place of whatever your physical ability is in the early years, there is something to do at Forest School. So you can have that mixed age play, because some people can go climb trees and some people can go digging and some people can do those things. And that is like... huge part of what I think makes Forest School great is that you can, or social emotionally, you can go, like, I'm not, you know, today the kids had built a zip line in the woods and they were, I always feel patronizing when I say I was really proud of them, but, like, you know, when they do things and you go, like, oh, my chest has a feeling, because they'd set up at the top of the zip line a log that increased, it sort of went up at an angle, like you might make the edge of a den. And so they could start the zip line at different heights depending, and they were so okay with each other going, I'm going to start down here. I'm not ready to do that. Can you pass it to me? I'm actually going to go from up here. I'm going to, and it was fully level and it was fully like, no one was egging each other on. No one was going like, you have to do it from here. They just were all like, and then, you know, as they bring it up, they go, oh, no, because he's only doing it from down here, isn't he? Yeah, okay, so let's bring it up. And I was just like, sorry, I'm getting weepy now. But what I was trying to say was then you take that to, you know, where physical abilities and social emotional abilities are also different for older people. And I include that social emotional thing because I do think that can be huge. I know lots of people I know, it's not necessarily physical. It's like sometimes becomes a fear of getting hurt or a fear of I might get myself into a place that I can't get out of. And forest school being that thing that you can just go, whatever you've got today is perfect, you know?
We
still
have, I think there's something about that kind of mixed age groups as well. Cause I know in our adult group, we've got some younger adults and older adults, and there's something about, I had that moment about 2 months ago. We were coppicing from Hazel, partly for, we've got a forest garden in our little site. And there were three women, all slightly different ages. One was probably about 70, one was about in, I'm guessing, late 60s. There's another one who's probably in the 40s. And they all wanted to sort of learn how to coppice. They knew about coppicing and stuff, but they wanted to learn and did it. And I just stepped back and watched them, and it was the conversation and the gusto. We underestimate sometimes what people are capable of. We think we're just going to come along and sit and not very strong. So I walked back to the fire, and there was somebody just sat at the fire, tending the fire. And I just had one of those moments where you just thought, this is it, this is so wholesome. And the blackbird singing its heart out. And that's, it's just those really rich moments. And then last, when I was away for a month in March, and just kept getting little posts of how the forest garden was, and I got FOMO. I was in Africa with the leopards and all the rest of it, but I got FOMO. And I just thought, that just shows you, doesn't it? I really do treasure that sort of, that mix of people. And
today's episode of the Forest School Podcast is brought to you by us, Children of the Forest. Me and Wen wanted to let you know about our Level 3 Forest School Leader Training Course. We are down in Devon. Well, we're on the Devon-Somerset border. We're right off the M5. So anybody that's travelling up and down that motorway, we are super easy to get to. Our training is 10 days, not 5, like some people do. 10 immersive days in our woods, surrounded by all our like amazing play structures and resources. And we deep dive over those 10 days into not just what's covered in the course, but also we do things like play theory, neurodiversity, holistic human needs to make sure that you're equipped to facilitate the best possible forest school experiences. We keep you on track with monthly online meetings, email support. We have a Discord server for all our students, helping you to navigate the coursework, and we provide regular feedback. It's not one of those like you've done it and now you're out on your own. You have to rely on Facebook groups or people who've done the course before. Like you, we meet you all the way through the course, and our flexible submission options mean we can work around your learning style, including submitting some of your coursework as video discussions or as different things. We've had people submit watercolor paintings as part of their coursework, and that's absolutely fine, all counts. So whenever possible, we also visit your site and come and observe your sessions, not in an assessment kind of way, but in a like free consultancy that's built into the course. We come and look and like, hey, I wonder if you could design this thing over here, or maybe your staff look like they could do with some training in XYZ. We're there to kind of give you that extra bump up. So don't miss this opportunity to transform your career, make a lasting impact in children's lives. You can visit childrenoftheforest.com, and there's hyphens in between all those words, or you can email us at childrenoftheforest@outlook.com to learn more about our Forest School Leader Training Course. Please, please, please don't wait around on this one, guys. We only do one course a year, and we only have about 15 spaces so that we can give the right amount of attention to people. And next one starts in autumn of this year. So again, head to childrenoftheforest.com and get yourself or somebody else that you know booked on to that course today. That's one of my notes that I have here was, and because you've mentioned adults of different ages there, and one of the things that I, Sarah, this might be a question for you because of your work in the at university and stuff. I was thinking about how often at Forest School we talk about the benefits of mixed age play and the benefits that it come, you know, brings of up and down and all these things. And then I was thinking about people I know and Forest School companies that I know. And I would say, as far as I can think, generally they are run by either one person, an individual doing his thing, or a few individuals, but who are all of a similar age within a, you know, margin of error. But I was wondering, Sarah, if you had any thoughts about the benefits of mixed age leadership, like what might be the benefits and the potential challenges that people need to navigate of having a mixed age leadership team?
Well, I do have direct experience of this because I do internal moderation for Mel's group and been working with her quite a lot. And she's got, she won't mind me saying she's in her 50s, and she's got staff who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s. And so it's very mixed. And it's great. I think you forget about how old people are. It's less about how old people are. It's how people feel, and what they feel they want to do, and what they feel they're capable of. And go back to my Tuesday group. I mean, we've had people, particularly during lockdown, we had some creatives who were all of a sudden without any work, and they came and joined us, and they were in their 40s and 50s and struggling with their mental health because of lockdown and finances and all of the pressures that were building up on them. And it was just nice to be together, and it didn't matter what ages people were, and everybody was able to support each other in whatever ways they could. And it was wonderful to have their strengths during that period. We took good use of it, you know, dug a new well. But you know, I really do think it's value. It's to go back to John's points about the importance of community. Community is so important. We really do need to do a lot of work on our societies, small ones and big ones, in terms of getting people to communicate better and care for each other better.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah. I think it's something that not that I necessarily miss from school, because I would hate to say that I miss something about being a teacher, but not necessarily an age thing, but that like experience thing of having like very experienced teachers. So I had some experienced teachers who were had been teaching for 20 odd years, and I was there having taught for 1 year, and there were some other people that had been teaching in the middle, and that mix of experience, whether it was an age thing or not, the mix of experience as a whole, then teaching staff, I can remember being really interesting. And then there's something that's, you know, because Forest School is because like when we're saying, it's not necessarily a financially lucrative thing, so you end up with these potentially like smaller delivery teams of like, it's financially viable for one person to deliver this or two people to deliver this. And so as a delivery team, you're not necessarily linked up, I'm going to say, in the same way with people of, maybe it's not mixed age leadership, maybe it's mixed experience leadership, like delivery teams. Does that make sense? I've sort of waffled.
I think that's where the regional groups come in. It's just... I mean, we're lucky round here. We've got a very strong group in Suffolk. We've got a very strong group in Norfolk. We've got a very strong group in Essex. And they do get together and share experiences and support each other really well. And that's nice.
Yeah, and I imagine, again, they are sort of growing, aren't they? And people are beginning to kind of network more, I think, since the... FSA's kind of vision for that to happen. And I guess as well as many of us who might be, you know, in our 30s and 40s and practicing, or maybe even younger, if we kind of keep with those networks, we might also kind of find the inspiration and the relationships and the collaboration for what steps we do take career-wise. Because, you know, as I was saying, if you don't know many people who've trodden that path, you think, well, what am I going to do? You know, for whatever reason, I'm, you know, this isn't working for me to be like out in outdoors 9 to 5, 5 days a week, you know, with a house full of mucky tarps and a oven full of kindling, you know. And to, you know, to network with people who are in a similar position and to think, what, you know, how are you making money? What is your plan? Oh, I've started doing this. I've started doing that, you know, because it's also very difficult to know in what direction to go, you know, like for you, Sarah, how did you, so you've gone down this kind of academic route in terms of your writing and your teaching. Was that something that was always there whilst you were doing Forest School, or is that something that you would deliver
the academic side? The academic side paid for the Forest School.
A sort of spark of an idea that came to you.
I mean, I could slope off and do bit things. You can, as an academic, you manage your own time to a certain extent. You're still, as long as you do your lecturing and your marking, what you do in between is very much up for grabs. And I was headhunted by the university because of my outdoor learning drive and interests. They wanted me because they wanted to extend that side of their delivery curriculum.
How did they find out about what you were doing? Were you already publishing and broadcasting what you were up to?
I was already writing articles for Nursery World and things like that. I've been doing, I write. I mean, that's what I do. It's one of those things that I do. I write a diary every morning. It's just the way I hold my life together, is spin it through words.
In the morning? You haven't done anything. What are you writing down?
What I did the night before.
All right.
Otherwise, it's the other reason for that is because you forget. And it's to keep my memory fresh. I write because, you know, you wake up in the morning, what the hell did I do yesterday? Oh, I know. You write it down.
That's probably quite good as well, because it helps you to sift, I suppose. You sift out. You're not necessarily getting,
And also, you know, you're monitoring your own emotional reactions to things. And sometimes you think, no, that wasn't a terribly helpful reaction. Let's rethink that. Let's reframe that. And sort of go back over things. But yeah, so they knew I was right. They knew I was a scribbler. And I'd met the head of the faculty at some things where we got together and talked about outdoor learning and what have you. And he said, I'd like you to come and work for us. And I said, no, I won't, because I'm just having treatment for breast cancer and you don't want me at the moment. I'll come next year. So I did. I went next year. There we go. And that was good because I managed to get outdoor learning modules and eventually Forest School modules onto undergraduate programs and postgraduate programs. And I think, you know, that's one route. It's only one route. John's route, one route. Well, my route is another route. I'm sure there's 100 more other routes that people take.
I'm just wondering how emergent was that then, Sarah? Because I've always seen my life as it's been very emergent. There's nothing been really planned.
No.
It happens. It's like the trauma and anxiety thing. I think, well, where on earth does that come from? And it's just something that's arisen and it's chimed at the time. And I can see that happening now. I just talking to Jude saying, I think I need to go on a vision quest because I'm still a bit unsure where am I heading with all this?
Why do you need to know? a door will open.
I just need to, it's something about clarifying, there's something about clarifying intention and really clarifying what is my calling at the moment. I think I know it, but there's something about...
Yeah, we have the year of...
If you haven't got a calling, then
you're right.
And I think I know
you can drift if you don't think it through. You're right. I've had spells when I've just drifted, but then something occurs and it anchors you, and you get onto it and reflect on it.
So yeah, just going back to your journey that you just said then, was that much planned or was it very emergent as it came along? You think, oh, I could get a forest school module going at the university here, which is quite unique.
No, that was planned.
Did that just pop up?
No, I wanted, that was an intention. Planned. If they were going to have me, they'd got to let me write their modules.
Yeah.
You know, that I really wanted all those young students to have had a taste of forest school, so when they hit it in whatever fields they went into, usually teaching, but not always, it wouldn't come as such a surprise and revelation. They say, oh, yes, I'm familiar with that. I can go with that. I can encourage it. I can help it happen. No, that was really something I was very, very passionate about and still am, as you can tell. I really, really wanted these youngsters to, you know, come on. Time to get it into everywhere, please.
There was a gear shift there. I think we all heard the gear shift. A nice one. A run that's very much appreciated. Okay, I'm gonna jump on that gear shift there then. I'm gonna ask you, so if you because you're both very chilled and like you're saying, John, you just kind of take stuff as it comes, and you both of you have got such a positive outlook. But if I could ask you to park that for just a minute, if you could really embody some like grumpiness, what would be the things that you guys look back at and you go, people that do forest school today, they don't know how easy they've got it because we had to. What's the like, what's the armchair, you know, grumpiness that you're like, but possibly because you guys have laid the way and, you know, opened doors for all of us to, you know, I was talking to Sarah, I think it was you I was talking to at the conference the other year, and I said, I've never done forest school in a world where there isn't an FSA. That's never been a thing for me. There's always been an FSA from day one for me. But I wondered if there were any other things that you look back now and kind of, you know, it's like, oh, we used to have to explain this over and over again, or we used to have to really, you know, you couldn't get tarps because of whatever reason, or this used to have to cut, you know, I don't know. It was still ration. It was.
Tarps were all woven out of our own hair.
Back in the day. Yeah, I know.
But that's back on trend now, John. People are weaving their own clothes out of nettles these days. It's such a hipster
well,
fashion.
In the 70s.
I don't know. I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you think that all the fuss and poo-ha over risk has tempered, John?
Ooh.
I know it was really, really a big.
Over risk has tempered? No, I don't think it has tempered. I think it's worse in some ways now. Yeah. I think it's probably becoming a grandparent and all the rest of it, I still see how risk-averse people are, big time. Even in early years, I've seen it. And now I'm sort of having more contact with nurseries again, whereas because that's, as Lewis quite rightly said it, that's where it all sort of grew from. And certainly in Worcestershire, being one of the first local authorities, it all started with that early years funding when we had, all of the children's centres operating and stuff. But I think it's in some ways, I think that's got worse, and possibly because of a breakdown in local authority involvement, where local people were actually supporting the local people, because all of that's gone now.
Yeah,
this is the grumpiness I wanted. Come on.
So this is my grumpiness, is that actually I look back and I think it was halcyon days when we started, certainly in Worcestershire, there was just such a drive, and it was this new kid on the block. So this was in 1990. It started in this local authority, and it was the world, anything was possible. So there was something, and it's all to do with timing. I always think I was just lucky to be here in the right place, the right time, and there was a real buzz. a real bow.
And we had Susanna.
That has dissipated, particularly when the coalition government came in. That's when it all started to go slip away. And that certain Mr. Gove came in, and it just felt like, okay, we've got to do it on our own terms now, and we've got to try and make a living out of this now, and it's got harder. As Wem and Lewis will know, that's what, for me, has shifted. And now working in the third sector, and working with a CIC, a couple of CICs locally, and seeing it is a struggle. And I'm lucky because I've been spat out the other end and I can mentor. But we're having to scrap around for bits of money. We've just managed to get some really good... I mean, there's some lovely funds if you can get them. Like, we've just got some wellbeing money for a whole year's project working with a poet out in the woods. All around health and wellbeing and trees and watching the trees that we're planting grow and all the rest of it. It's lovely when you get the money, you can be creative in some ways, but I think that's my main grump, is actually you've got it worse than we had it.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there was a structure in place, there was an enthusiasm. One of my big disappointments is we haven't got this into initial teacher training, and it needs to be an essential part of this, not just forest school, but just nature-based learning. It's not there, and you've got it, little bits of it. I mean, we were one of the better-known teacher training institutions, Worcester Uni. Used to do loads when we were in the local authority with them, and it was the same thing. They had lots of placements, going to forest school settings, all the rest of it. That's all gone.
Yeah.
It's not happening now. So I am more concerned now, I'm more concerned that we're not getting the wholesome aspect there in many ways. And yet, it is a bit of, you know, I think COVID has hopefully stimulated people into sort of thinking, no, there's better ways. I know we've got this education system and health system that is crumbling, that's cracking, and maybe forest school can be an active part of something that comes out of the ashes.
You know the book Dinosaurs and All That Rubbish? When everything cracks, all the green things grow up through the cracks. Mm. That's what that's what we've got hope for. Is everything's cracking, all the green things.
I just wanted you guys to be grumpy for 5 minutes and you couldn't give it to me. I just wanted to...
Well, I was going to quote Leonard Cohen when you said that. It's the cracks that let the light in, you know. Let the bells ring.
Yeah.
The birds will sing. And then we'll realise it. Yeah. Even though forest school, I mean, it's been fantastic to see that forest school has become a term that's on a lot of people's lips that you would never anticipate. Somebody on the train you meet said, oh, you're involved with forest school. I said, oh, yeah, how do you know about that? And it's just become... So there's that side of it. But the other side of it is, I think to do it the way Wem and Lewis do it, in that wholesome, regular, holistic way, is getting harder.
Yeah.
And partly because people don't have the support who are working within the system as it is at the moment, that was around in post year 2000, when quite a few local authorities said, right, no, we're going to actually support this, and we're going to actually help and support all the primary schools, secondary schools.
And you could get hold of the Playbuilder funding and things like that. There were pots of money that you could get hold of to push things forward. And they just aren't there now.
Right.
And we've got a more traumatised society now, I think, with COVID and with the effects of what we're on. and there's more stress around, isn't there?
I think so. Which is why there's a need for adults forest.
And we need it, this wholesome approach, more and more. So it is that having that whole right across the board from early years to death.
Or go
That's
back
interesting.
To our
tribe. I've just...
yeah.
Sorry, I've just finished the Biophilia Effect book, which we're going to do a whole podcast on. But there is a bit in that which talks about it's like the right to die in nature and to pass away in a garden and things like that. Sorry, just because you said right through to death, and it just made me think, oh, that's, you know. And I was also wondering if you're saying about, you know, like it's harder and harder to do the holistic, long-term, you know, all of those lovely things. But through our conversation, actually, what I've heard is that is harder in schools, but becoming more accessible for adults and so that, yes, it may be that that's not where, you know, that's not as feasible in schools. Schools are currently going through lots of other things that mean that funding is difficult, or you know, there's an outcome focus to things, but that this movement towards adult community and all of those things, do you think an adult forest school group would have been possible 20 years ago in the same way that it is today?
Don't think so.
Sarah's shaking her shoulders.
I'm not sure.
Doesn't translate well onto a podcast.
Not in the way. I mean, you used to have that. Well, you always had, you know, the volunteer group, BTCV, all the rest of it. I know midweek, they'd be older people going out and doing that practical work in the countryside. That's always been there. And you look at National Trust volunteers, that's always been there. But to actually go on a session that's got the whole, all six principles there, probably not. But it's a different way of being.
The thing is, if you do it with the adult groups, de facto, there's a large element of remediation, which if you do it with the young kids, you shouldn't need. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it.
What does remediation mean? I don't know what that word means.
When you're healing somebody who's been damaged by their experiences or not been enabled to maximise their potential in some way, opening doors, opening windows into your mind, into your body, into your soul, which we know we can do gently, and or help people to do it for themselves. Which, if they had it as children, what would they be capable of? I still think it needs to be there from the early years onwards. Mm. That's, you know, yes, I love going out with my oldest, but, you know, I want the kids to have it. I want them to have it as a matter of course. It should be part of their entitlement as children.
Do you think our skill set as leaders, so I was wondering if that skill set of delivery reflects most closely wherever we are, because I can remember trying to run toddler groups before I had children, and Wem came and then helped me with toddler groups, and because Wem had children at that point and I didn't, was able to go, it's this and it's this and it's this, and you know, you can't just have a shower tent toilet, right? They're not going to go for that. And, you know, you need to do hot drinks. And I was going, what the fuck is this? and then, I, you know, and it was immensely helpful, but I couldn't have got that experience, you know. And as I've now then had my own children, I feel like my delivery of toddler sessions, a parent and child sessions, you know, that kind of vibe has been way better since having my own children. And then I'm wondering, as my children become teenagers, will I then feel more adept at sessions with, you know, will I be drawn to sessions with teenagers? And is there something about then, as you you know, most recently feel like, oh, actually is it adults that is my thing? Does that aptitude, when would you say that aptitude kind of has moved or not moved?
I think it's not necessarily to do with, like, it's about experience, isn't it? And obviously you've got more experience if you are yourself directly, you know, experienced either with a child of a certain age or you yourself are a certain age. But I think you can get that experience through just proximity, you know. So I had more experience with teenagers just through my teaching career because I did secondary. So I feel all right with that age group, even though my children aren't quite there yet, personally. And I think it's, you know, perfectly possible for, I think, a younger practitioner to be able to facilitate a group for older people. But I know what you mean in terms of, and especially like that energy matching thing that I mentioned earlier, in terms of, I can imagine that, you know, you're, if you're used to being around toddlers all the time because you've got your own, then you're kind of like, you just click into that energy. And similarly with, you know, working with groups that are a similar age, I think you kind of, you've already got a bit of a wavelength similarity, haven't you?
Yeah.
Going in.
So, no, I'm entirely with you there, Wem. I think it is having that, as you said, proximity with whoever it is you're working with. You just feel into that. I think I'm really lucky at the moment because I'm actually working with toddlers, sort of oldies, and occasionally plugging into adolescents. And that was my main, or my sort of majority of my forest school working life up until a few years ago was with adolescents. But I just don't have the energy now. I remember working with a, how old was he? He was 14 and there was two of us. And he saw us both as granddads. This was 10 years ago, so probably mid-50s. And then there was Glyn, he was heading towards retirement. And both of us said to him halfway through, and it was 2-1.
Wow.
I did one day a week. Fantastic. He had so much energy, but he sort of, you know, lots of complicated needs and issues and stuff. But he just took the piss out of him big time. And I remember saying to him a couple of months in, saying, "How do you find it working with two slower, much slower people?" He said, "I love it. I just love taking the piss out of you two big time." And it was just that sort of. So there's that banter, but there was behind that, there was a seriousness in our questions saying, is he really clicking with this because we're older? Or is he just clicking into a little bit of possibly wisdom there and the fact that we could take the piss out of ourselves? So it was just interesting,
I think if you're working multi-generationally, the skill set that we're asking of forest school leaders is huge. And I think it is something that builds, and you have to acknowledge where you've got gaps. And I think that is part of the CPD element. I really do feel that quite strongly.
It's always struck me as being similar to, so I did music at college and then I did music at a degree. And all the way through, people would say things like, you're not going to work in music. Statistically, that's not what you're going to do. But a music degree gives you organization skills, like teamwork skills. You can read a lot of information quickly and understand it. You can, you know, all these like, in air quotes, like soft skills. They were like, that's the stuff that you're going to go through and go, that's what's actually going to get you a job, not the double bass, right? No one's going to hire you as a double bass player. It's just not going to happen. But they were saying, and I feel like forest school is in a similar vein. There's something about like forest school delivery has so many soft skills associated with it that you could take what you learn as a forest school leader and take that in so many different directions. If I genuinely think if you can run a forest school kindergarten, like you go into management, and that is the same skill set of a lot of like if you can.
You can, yeah. You can go into emergency response teams,
aeronautical engineering,
you know, forensic you science. Could be
you'd be a shit hot poker player, yeah, if you've got that face down, if you can just collection. Not react to whatever the kids throw at you. I don't mean physically. I mean, you know, when you get stuff that you just poker face it and go, mm-hmm, yes, I understand, you know.
That's interesting. You can...
Yes. What, like when, like I did the other day, like I did the other day when somebody told, somebody who was very small, told me a joke that was, what do you call a cow with a penis on its head? And I said, I don't know. And they said, cow penis head? I had to go, excellent. Fine. And yeah, I was like, is this worth... okay, fine. And it was, she was, she'd been trying to make somebody else game. Laugh who was playing a game, who was frozen. And she was like, I made her laugh by my special joke. Oh, what was the joke? Good. It was this. Okay, brilliant. Okay, moving on now.
Yeah.
Great. Yes, yes. Right, I think
yeah, John's got another nap booked in.
Get on with their day. Thank you so much.
Sorry, I've got a nap.
I know. Well, so have
you
I.
You've got to go make.
So have make I. Cake. I get to sit on my bed.
That's
and
the
stare
thing. Cake. I'm finding now as I get older, if I take cake along to any session, doesn't matter whether it's little ones or really old ones, that's the way in.
Definitely. Oh, definitely. I take.
That's Tuesday, definitely I take. The way in. Take cake every time.
Yeah, yeah. Very important. Yeah, yeah.
You take cake too, Sarah?
Well, actually, not always.
Where have you
also
go?
Did we did nettle soup a couple of weeks ago. Because I'm trying to convince the blokes that yeah. they don't have to destroy all the nettles. Because it's a long process. Yeah. When you're of the mentality that things need to be tidy. Ooh, I struggle with that. So we had nettle soup.
And was eating the nettles was an attempt to teach them that if they want to, they can, but they just have to eat them on all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. Can't get rid of all. If you get rid of all the nettles, you don't get nettle soup. Yeah, let's just think about this.
Yeah. There we go. Oh, thank you so much for chatting with us this evening.
Well, I hope that's been of use. People like
that. Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. It's very inspiring always to talk with you guys.
Sarah, we will see you at the symposium, and I'm not sure when we will next see you, John.
Conference?
Probably September. September,
October. Probably. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but can't make the proposal.
Got a shout on the way past. Okay, bring it. I'm going to shoot. Thank you
Love
so much, guys.
See. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
All the best.
It's time to thank the Patreon people, but I'm going to thank them in a slightly different lens this time. Normally, we thank you lovely, lovely people that are supporting us on Patreon from behalf of me and Wem. But you guys on Patreon are the ones who have supported this episode. You have brought this episode to all the people listening. So there are people listening to this episode who got to listen to a podcast because of the generosity of these lovely Patreon people. If you want to be somebody who is generous enough to support this podcast and to help give it to more people, then you can head to patreon.com/theforestschoolpodcast. But this one, this episode with Lucy Jones was brought to you by Rachel and Karen, Matthew, Catherine, Gareth, Rebecca, Rosie, Julie, Rachel, Candice, Claire, Heidi, Louise, Michael, and Anna. So on behalf of everybody that's listening to this podcast, I would like to say thank you to all you people for making this podcast possible. And if you, again, if you want to sign up, you can go to patreon.com/theforestschoolpodcast.